Hello, my name is Elena Shotland. I am chair of the ATS Sleep and Respiratory Neurobiology Journal Club. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Judith Owens. Thanks for joining us, Judy.
My pleasure.
So my first question to you is, I just want to hear a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And where did you study?
So I grew up in Providence, little old Rhode Island, and went to undergraduate and medical school at Brown University, where there was a 7-year continuum program. So basically, I went from being a senior in high school to being on the road to being a doctor. And then after that, I did a pediatric residency at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for 3 years, and then went to the wilds of Minnesota, to Minneapolis, and did a developmental behavioral pediatrics fellowship, and was lucky enough to also be enrolled in a master's degree in public health program at the University of Minnesota. Go Gophers. And then came back to Rhode Island. Unfortunately, my mother was very ill and I wanted to be with her. But I also, again, was fortunate enough to be accepted into a fellowship program in child psychiatry at Brown, based at Bradley Hospital. And that was finally the end of my training. I decided I wasn't going to pursue the adult portion of the psychiatry program because I thought I should end my adolescence at some point and get a real job. And so then I came back to working at Brown to Hasbro Children's Hospital, which had just opened as part of Rhode Island Hospital. And I was there for 18 years. And then took a trip to Washington, D.C., where I was head of the pediatric sleep program at Children's National Medical Center for 4 years. And then I've been at Boston Children's Hospital for 8.5 years now.
Great. How did you get interested or involved in sleep medicine?
Well, it was really, I would say, a combination between recognizing my own ignorance of the field, but being faced on a daily basis, particularly as a fellow in behavioral pediatrics and in child psychiatry, with patients who had sleep problems, and I had no idea what to do with them. And then when I came back to Brown to be on the faculty, they were actually looking for a co-director of their nascent pediatric sleep program. And I said, well, what the heck? That sounds interesting. and I probably don't know less about this than most other of my colleagues. So I learned a lot on the job and was lucky enough to be coming into the field at a time when it was actually taking off. You know, the first description of obstructive sleep apnea in children was in 1975, not that long ago. So, you know, we've gone from barely acknowledging that children have sleep problems to really becoming a bona fide field. And that has been so exciting to watch and be part of.
Who would you say mentored, helped, and or inspired you?
Well, certainly my colleague at Brown, Dr. Mary Karskatten, who has mentored and inspired a whole generation or two of individuals coming into the field of both adult and pediatric sleep medicine. But I do remember that a colleague of mine sent me a Christmas card, and in that said, my present to you is I think you could be a great researcher in pediatric sleep medicine. And I thought that was so lovely and unique and inspirational and gave me some confidence to proceed.
Of what achievement or paper are you most proud?
Well, I would say that probably the 2014 American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement on healthy school start times really launched my second, third, whatever career professional interest in advocacy. And I think that's something that I've been interested in for a long time, but really realizing that I could make an impact. And of course, I give 100% credit to my colleagues on the task force that created this paper. But it still delights me to see it quoted as really being one of the statements that moved the start time issue from academics, this is all about school achievement, to this is about health. And I think that that was a major shift in kind of the perspective that continues to this day and hopefully has helped galvanize states like California and Florida to issue mandates that require that schools start at a healthy hour.
What brings you the most joy professionally?
Wow, that's a tough question. I mean, I love seeing patients and families, and I'm continuously surprised. You would think at this point I've seen everything, but I haven't. And also seeing these families in the context of precepting our sleep fellows really helps me to feel like I'm myself mentoring the next generation. And that's really important. I love giving talks. And in particular, I really love giving presentations to specialties outside of my own. For example, I've been giving a number of presentations recently to dental and orthodontic groups. And the idea of introducing the importance of pediatric sleep to these other groups is really exciting to me. And of course, you know, clinical research, as daunting and frustrating as it can be at times, is ultimately incredibly rewarding. And I am very proud that I've had a large number of research assistants over the years, all of whom have gone on to either medical school or to pursue a PhD in psychology. And many of them are involved in sleep research. And of course, you know, that success is entirely up to them, but having had a little bit of a role in that has really been very gratifying.
How did you keep up your career momentum?
Oh, well, you know, I think that's a really interesting question and an important one because, you know, the concept of burnout among physicians has really become very prominent. And I can totally see that. I think I keep reinventing myself to a certain extent. I am really a generalist in the sense that I've written papers and done research on virtually every pediatric sleep disorder that there is and branched out into sleep health disparities and global issues in pediatric sleep health. And that's really what keeps me on my toes because I'm constantly learning new things. And exploring fields and working with colleagues who are outside of what is a pretty narrow field of pediatric sleep medicine still. And so when I can cross those boundaries and establish research and educational relationships with colleagues in other specialties, that really keeps me young, I hope.
Is there a backstory that would be fun for us to know?
I thought about that, and I guess I have two examples. One is not such a fun backstory, and that one is on my last day on call at Children's Hospital during my residency in Philadelphia. I was driving home in the morning and had a car crash. Luckily, no one was hurt. My car was totaled, and I was pretty shaken up. But in retrospect, thinking about it later, I realized that if I had been awake, alert, I had a decent night's sleep. It was a beautiful day, and the road conditions were pristine, and I would not have had that accident. And that led to my early interest in work hour regulations and, working with the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and other organizations to try to push forward this issue of work hour restrictions for resident physicians in particular. The other story is that probably most people don't know that I've been a singer all my life. And when I was lived in Minneapolis, I was part of a group that performed at the Renaissance Fair. And we were all in costume. And I had a hoop skirt and a large bustle-like thing in the back. And of course, the only way we could go to the bathroom was in a porta potty, which was pretty much impossible to get in that costume. So I learned not to have anything to drink, for the entire day. But that's one of my, I think most people would not envision me in that situation. But it's always brought a great deal of joy to my life to be involved in singing and music.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
I don't really think so. I know that sounds a little arrogant, but I feel like every deviation I've taken from a straight road trajectory has added to my sense of who I am as a professional and as a person. And that's, I would not necessarily advocate that, new faculty coming up follow my lead in terms of that, because I think the tendency now, the advice is to find a specific area, especially in research, that you want to focus on and go with that for your whole life. But I've never done that. And I think it was fortunate that I was in a field that was just developing. And so I had the luxury of being more of a generalist, because virtually everything that was a research question had not been looked into. I remember we published one of the very first papers on the relationship between television viewing. I mean, how ancient is that? And sleep. Because I noticed that my patients were coming in and saying they had a television set in their bedroom. And I'm just going, what? What is that? And obviously that, area has exploded as the electronic devices available has exploded. So I guess I cite those examples as just, if you pay attention and you listen to your patients, You'll generate really interesting and important clinical research questions. And I think I've always tried to do that. And so all these disparate pieces of what I've done, I feel have all contributed to where I am today.
If you had not been involved in sleep medicine, what do you think you would have done instead?
Well, there was a very brief period in my childhood when I wanted to be a nun. That did not last long. And then there was a period where I wanted to be a professional ice skater, and my complete lack of athletic ability made that virtually impossible. But I honestly, since I was about 7 or 8, I wanted to be a doctor. And so I was very focused on that. Although when I got to college, I briefly dabbled in the idea of majoring in art history, because I love art history. And I could have done that because in the Brown program, you could major in classics or Regency literature or, whatever, and still be assured a place in medical school. But I took that may be one of my regrets, what I would have done differently now that I'm talking about it, because I ended up getting a bachelor of science degree as an undergraduate in biology, and took 3 physics courses and 3 calculus courses, and every semester I tried to take at least one humanities course. But I don't know why I was so driven at the time, and if I had relaxed a little bit and taken advantage of being at a wonderful liberal arts college like Brown, that probably would have been a better road to take.
What are the biggest technological innovations or changes you've seen over your career?
Well, this whole world of applying technology to measuring sleep I never would have imagined that when I first started off. I was at a keynote lecture at the World Sleep Society meeting in Rio a few weeks ago, and Michael Chi gave this wonderful talk about these wearable devices, which are now, it's not just us researchers that have these devices, they're commercially available, and which ones are accurate and what kind of information they give you. And I think it's a brave new world that we're still coming to terms with. I think the whole idea of parents, caregivers, families coming to us with these new technologies that we don't necessarily know quite what to do with them is a real challenge. And as a field, we have to embrace it because it's there. But how we do that and how quickly we do that, I think, are very important questions. So I think that whole world of home measurement and consumer-driven measurement of sleep parameters is not going to go away. And it's something that is going to continue to grow. And, I have worked in a number of capacities with industry over the years. I'm a consultant to a number of tech companies. I've worked with pharma over the years doing clinical trials. And I do think that with a more than an ounce of caution, the relationship between academia and industry is important from a research standpoint. We need to have clear parameters around that, of course, but there's much that can be a win-win in those kinds of collaboration. So they are, many of these companies are collecting huge amounts of data points. And to, you know, an extent that as an individual researcher or research group, we couldn't hope to do. And so if there's a way to share that information, I think that we need to think very strategically and carefully about how to do that, not just whether or not to do it.
In retrospect, what has surprised you the most over the course of your long career?
Well, I think recently, you know, I mentioned the growth of electronics and electronic devices and, you know, how these impact sleep, particularly in the adolescent population. But I think the rise in the use of melatonin in the pediatric population has really took me by surprise. And in retrospect, it probably shouldn't have, given that it's so widely available in the U.S. as opposed to many countries around the world where it's by prescription only and it's pretty strictly regulated. Here, it's a wild west. And, you know, there have been several papers published very recently now that show that the variability in the actual amount of melatonin, including in products like gummies that we're giving to young children, is just huge variability. So I think that that's a real challenge for our field. I was just writing something before we signed on about, we have a task force as part of the International Pediatric Sleep Association on melatonin use that it's taking a global perspective. I just completed a term as president of IPSA. And so was developed a number of these different task forces to address these questions that really have a global impact, but most of the information or the policy or the guidelines are coming from the U.S. and they're very U.S. centric. And I think it's really important to start taking a more global perspective because there are many regions and countries around the world that are that also find some of these issues to be very important. School start times is another example of that, and that now many countries around the world are contemplating changing school start times, doing research on school start times, but you know, all of the policy statements have come from within the U.S. virtually. So I think the opportunity to hear other perspectives, other voices, cultural issues is really becoming increasingly important as our world shrinks. And as we work with colleagues more easily through Zoom and other virtual means around the world.
What do you think are the biggest challenges for the field now?
I think really defining what our identity is, and I'm speaking specifically of pediatric sleep medicine. I think that there has been a lot of emphasis on infant sleep, infant and toddler sleep, more evidence recently on adolescent sleep, but there is a large gap in terms of what we know about school-age children and sleep. And some of that relates to this concept of sleep health disparities. And I think that is a huge challenge for our field, both in terms of sleep disorders like obstructive sleep apnea, which is more common in African American children, but is less often diagnosed and less often treated. And so there's issues of access to care and access to pediatric sleep studies, for example. And just sleep help in general, which we know for low-income families and racial and ethnic minority families to an extent, are not necessarily a priority given the rest of the challenges that they face in their daily lives with parents working two jobs and single parents and all kinds of things. But that has resulted in a discrepancy between the sleep health of children who come from more affluent families and those who don't. And that's something that we really need to take on in a very earnest and dedicated way, because that should not exist, particularly in a country like the United States. Well, you know, I'm sure you know as well as I do that the percent of children who are living in poverty in the U.S. is, you know, just horrendous. So, but sleep is ostensibly free, right? So, you know, we need to make this part of the pillars of health. You know, we talk a lot about nutrition. We talk a lot about physical activity. We have to talk an equal amount about sleep. And, you know, it's interesting that WHO is doing updating a global survey on adolescent health. And so they asked us, what question would you ask about sleep? And that's a big challenge because there isn't one question. And, you know, my guess is they probably don't ask just one question about nutrition or one question about physical activity. On the one hand, we're glad to be invited to sit at the table, but we're sort of at one end away from the major players. So, you know, we need to start making those arguments in some of these larger epidemiological studies. Hey, remember sleep.
What advice would you give people new to the field of sleep medicine?
I think, you know, one of the joys of this field is that it's so multidisciplinary. And a lot of us are pulmonologists, a lot of us are respirologists, they say, in Canada, and a lot are come from the neurology world. But there are psychiatrists, there are EMTs, there are anesthesiologists, there are cardiologists that come to the sleep medicine field and bring their own level of expertise. And so I think it's very important, whatever field you come from, and that includes pediatrics or in family medicine, you bring your own perspective to sleep medicine and enrich the field because your skill set and your background and your fund of knowledge may be very different from the colleagues with which you work. And I will also include psychologists, very important group, particularly in pediatric sleep medicine. And I was one of the founders of the Society of Behavioral Sleep Medicine and was editor of the journal Behavioral Sleep Medicine for a number of years. And I so value the input and the expertise and the scientific rigor and research skill set with which psychologists come to the field. So bring your wagon with you and make our field better.
Is there anything we didn't ask you that you would like to tell us?
Well, I mean, this has been so fun.
It has been.
And, you know, I can't wait to hear the podcasts from the other folks that you've included, because I'm sure, again, we all have our own unique perspective that we bring along. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity to share my experience and thoughts such as they are with you and the audience. And This is a great project. Thank you for being involved with it. I think it's, you know, sleep medicine in the grand scheme of things in itself is not that old. So there are still, you know, pioneers in the field that are alive. And I hope that, you know, people like Alan Pack and Mary Kruskadden, you know, who really know what the evolution of the field has been all about. And that's pretty unique. You know, there aren't many specialties where you can talk to the true pioneers.
Thank you, Judy Owens, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.